I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Itai Benson, star of the Tony-nominated musical The Band's Visit. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our Two Jewish maven on Israel, Amir Eden, and our Shinchinim, Chen Denachi and Tamir Shakuri. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. June is busting out all over, which means summer is coming in soon. Actually, here in Tucson, Arizona, where I live, in the heart of the Sonoran Desert, the temperatures have been fiercely summery for a while now, and school and all the graduation ceremonies were completed well over a week ago. But even if you live in more temperate climes, it's reasonable to talk summer now. It's definitely time to start thinking about leaving town, journeying outward and onward. It's hot, really hot. And it must be time to play the immortal, eternally entertaining cut from the late great comedian Alan Sherman about kids going off to summer camp. Here it is, an annual tradition on Two Jewish for the past 15 years, believe it or not, this classic tune, Hello Mudda, Hello Fada.
Hello Mudda, Hello Fada, here I am at Camp Granada. Camp is very entertaining, and they say we'll have some fun if it stops raining. I went hiking with Joe Spivey. He developed poison ivy. You remember Leonard Skinner? He got ptomaine poisoning last night after dinner. All the counselors hate the waiters, and the lake has alligators, and the head coach wants no sissies, so he reads to us from something called Ulysses. Now I don't want this should scare you, but my bunkmate has malaria. You remember Jeffrey Hardy? They're about to organize a searching party. Take me home, oh Mudda Fada, take me home. I hate Granada, don't leave me out in the forest where I might get eaten by a bear. Take me home, I promise I will not make noise or mess the house with other boys. Oh, please don't make me stay, I've been here one whole day. Dearest Fada, darling Mudda, how's my precious little brother? Let me come home if you miss me. I would even let Aunt Bertha hug and kiss me. Wait a minute, it stopped hailing. Guys are swimming, guys are sailing, playing baseball, gee, that's better. Mudda Fada, kindly disregard this letter.
A truly legendary piece of American Jewish music. It is, of course, very funny, human, and appropriate for this time of year, but with kids going away to what we used to call sleepaway camp, and parents enjoying life again, missing their lovely, sweet children every moment they are gone. The truth is that with the cost of overnight camps these days, what parents find themselves missing most is financial solvency. Having had children at Jewish camps for many years, I can tell you that I am exaggerating a little. It isn't really that expensive. I just had to sell the family car and dog to pay for it, take out a second mortgage, and eat top ramen all summer, but it was worth it. Well, the truth is, summer camp is worth it because when kids attend a Jewish summer camp, they come back with an extraordinarily natural feeling about what it's like to live Jewishly every day without a thought of protesting or criticizing the experience. At camp, being Jewish is completely cool, the way it should seem in everyday life and at the synagogue, but doesn't always. If we could introduce all of our children to a total Jewish environment like camp, make it a regular part of their lives, we would make enormous progress towards ensuring the future of the American Jewish community for the next generation and generations to come. But it's also true that when we are able to replicate that kind of dedicated, embracing Jewish experience for adults and families and even seniors in our Jewish homes and in our temples, we begin to create the kind of future for Judaism that's essential to our continued flourishing in this remarkable country. Judaism was not made to be experienced in tiny bits and only in the synagogue. Judaism, a way of life, as my grandfather, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan of blessed memory, called it in his book of the same title. And as a way of life, it is meant to include the experiences and insights into every area of human endeavor. It's when we make Judaism a part of every aspect of our lives that we gain the greatest sense of goodness and holiness, of meaning and serenity. So, send your kids or grandchildren to Jewish camp, but take time to include Jewish rituals, study, prayer, and play in your own life every day, too. It's also time for vacation. Lots of people are heading out to enjoy the wide world outside of their home cities and towns. One of the great unsuspected pleasures of traveling is the chance to explore Jewish sites and living Jewish communities in far-flung places. I can assure you that we Jews have lived pretty much everywhere and have active synagogues in places you might never imagine. And it is always worthwhile and surprisingly gratifying to go out and find Jewish communities to pray with, to meet people and see the remarkable places we Jews have created in the far corners of the world. You can find Jewish places almost everywhere you go. Well, not so much in Antarctica or Fiji, but almost everywhere. Look up Jewish travel online. Just make sure you call ahead if you're going to a synagogue. In today's world, many of the shuls around the world require advance information on who is coming for security. Of course, the greatest Jewish destination of all is Israel. But there are synagogues and Jewish museums and monuments and wonderful Jewish places to visit in every corner of the globe. Search them out on your own travels this summer. One extraordinary Jewish place is Broadway in Manhattan. Our guest this morning, Itai Benson, stars in the wonderful musical The Band's Visit on Broadway, which is up for a multitude of Tony Awards this year. It's set in Israel and involves an Egyptian military band, a case of mistaken locations, and, well, it's much more complicated, funny, and charming than that. Find out all about it when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun. A place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town. Amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball. Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
To welcome our guest this morning, Broadway star Itai Benson, here's a song from the Tony-nominated musical The Band's Visit cast album, which is available now.
Love starts on a downbeat. Love starts when the music starts. Love starts when the tune is sweet and you lift your feet to the beat of your heart. Love makes a rhythm. Love dances in a dancer's shoes. It moves when you start to move. And what is the groove? The beat of your heart. And we played Moon River. And I want to hold your hand. And the girl in the white dress and the ribbons in her hair danced to my band. And I could feel my heart. It started jumping in my chest. And I smiled at her and she smiled at me. And the music did the rest. Love sparks on the upbeat, igniting with a minor nine, resolving to a major six. Then something clicks and everything starts. There goes the kick drum, spelling out the rhythm of love. telling you get off your seat and move your feet and dance to the beat of your heart.
We are delighted to welcome the Two Jewish, Itai Benson. He is one of the stars of the Broadway show that's now taking New York by storm and is really a remarkable work based originally on an Israeli film. It's called The Band's Visit. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
You know, one of the really interesting things about a theatrical adaptation of a movie is you get to do some things that weren't done in the film. The film was about a band's visit, but there wasn't a lot of music. This is a musical, and it's quite a remarkable score. What were your impressions when you first auditioned and then participated in the play?
Well, I was a big fan of the movie since it came out. My family is originally from Israel. I lived there when I was very little. And so when I heard that this film, this tiny independent Israeli film that was, right, you know, very popular and very famous there and somewhat famous here if you're a cinephile.
By the way, I loved it when it came out. We used it in the program at my synagogue, but you're right. It didn't exactly have the box office of Star Wars.
Sure. Not quite. Although, you know, it was all set. It was a huge darling at all the festivals.
Right,
it was
right.
Set to win Best Foreign Film, and then the Academy disqualified it because it has too much English.
Too much English, I remember.
Too much English. So, you know, when I heard that it was being adapted into a Broadway musical, I pretty much flipped. I couldn't believe that this, of all properties, you know, as you see in the season right now, we have Frozen, we have SpongeBob, we have Mean Girls. Those are the properties I'm used to, you know, hearing about for Broadway adaptations.
Right.
So when I heard about that, I vowed, I mean, I said to myself, I have to be a part of this. I must, because when would this ever happen again? When would I be able to utilize this part of my history, my heritage, in my work? I just always assumed that was a separate part of my life, the Hebrew language and my Middle Eastern upbringing.
What an incredible opportunity.
Incredible. And so I had actually worked with the writer Itamar Moses previously. Actually, when it was announced that he was working on this, we were working together on a separate show. And I remember having a conversation about the film with him and talking to him about how much I loved it. And it was a long process because the directors changed. So I auditioned for the original workshops of the piece, which were under a different director. And then when the new director came in, there were casting changes, so I was no longer a part of the project. And then there were casting changes again when they moved to Broadway, and I sort of had to, I guess I would say, like, fight my way back in. So it was a... It was one of those jobs that I knew in my heart I just had to do. I didn't care where it was. I would have done this in some basement off Broadway. I didn't care. This was a story that was important for me to tell personally and artistically.
We will hear more about that story and the music from Itai Benson of The Band's Visit when we return in just a moment here on Two Jewish.
Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Kohan Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Kohan and Irma Kohan, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Kohan Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Kohan Foundation Award, please go to kohanaward.com, kohanaward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is kohanaward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's TOOJewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website at 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store as very popular Jewish podcast, Top 10 in North America, according to Moment Magazine. We welcome our maven on Israel, Amir Eden, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Amir.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
We've been talking about some of the distinctions between Israeli and American culture. You're as well qualified as anybody to talk about this. There's some differences in the way we raise our kids.
Right. So, you know, I was born in Israel. So in a very young age, I'm talking about first grade. You know, my mom would say bye-bye and I will walk to the school alone. Sometimes with a friend, sometimes alone. It was like walking there, right? And then freedom, you know, as a teenager, was like, we walk to everywhere, downtown, stores, movie theaters, walk, right? And then my boys were born here. They're Americans. I mean, they were born in California, San Francisco. So when we came back to visit, when they were 10, 11 years old, you know, we'll go to my parents, their grandparents' home and neighborhood, which was not the neighborhood that I grew up at. And my son would say, Dad, I want to go play soccer. And I would say, sure. And I would put my shoes and walk with him, right? And my mom would say, where are you going? And I said, well, the kid goes to play soccer just with friends that he doesn't know. So I got to be there to watch him, to see what he does, right? And then someone would come, a neighbor that I've never met, and say, oh, what a cute kid. Can he come over for lunch? Mm-hmm. And boom, he's gone. He's going to lunch. And then they call us and they find us and they say, hey, can you stay for an overnight? And he stays for an overnight. We don't know them, right? So here in America, when they were in a school, you know, we would meet a parent and ask, can we have a play date? And they will say, wait, let's look at the schedule. Tell me when. I will tell you when. 3 weeks from now, tell us when they're going to, when you're going to arrive and when you're going to leave. You know, for Israelis, it's a shock because everything is flexible and everything is now, not in 3 weeks and not when. Why she needs to know when I'm going to leave? You know, in our eyes, it's different.
It is different. It's really different. I mean, it was more like that when I was growing up as a kid, but that's a really long time ago in America, and I think we've really lost that. Mm-hmm. There's some other differences between Israelis and
Americans. So one of them is I think it's in the DNA. It's a cultural DNA, which is that everything in the States, you know, because we have here more than 300 million people, everything has to be in the box, you know, so we can get along and there's bureaucracy and everyone knows, you know, how to be successful. So if you go to a bank and the bank says, let's say there's a big sign saying 2 p.m. closed, okay? Americans look at it and it's closed because that's the way it should be. But in Israel, when you walk into a bank and it says closed at 2, in your mind, you're asking, okay, so what should I say? What should I do in order to make it open?
How do I get around this?
You know, yeah, get around it. So I'll give you an example, which is a funny one. My uncle, who's a circuit judge in Florida, came to Israel, you know, to visit. Now, he's an American, doesn't speak Hebrew, is not an Israeli. Came to visit my dad, his brother. We're sitting in the balcony, and my dad says, let's go to Masada tomorrow. Now, Masada, I'm sure that the majority of the listeners know, you know, it's a beautiful place, historical and, you know, meaningful, and you really need to visit. So I said, of course. But I said, Dad, look, you're retired. He's on vacation. And I know Masada is not going to be open all day long. So if you want to go to Masada, we need to wake up and we need to go. Yes,
early,
yes.
Because it gets hot.
Correct. Right. But it's closed as well, right? That's why it's hot.
Oh,
it's closed.
Yes, right.
So what happened was they were talking and then in the morning they had coffee and they read and they talked and it was too late and they said, let's go to Masada. And I said, guys, it's going to be closed. I said, no, it's going to be okay. You know, it's another thing with Israelis. It's going to be okay.
It's going to be okay.
So my dad drove. I sat next to him and my uncle sat behind and we got to Masada. As we get to Masada, it's closed. Closed. So there's a gate. The gate is closed and there is a security officer and he's asking us, or me, because I was closer, you know, in the window to him, said, are you for the ceremony? And I looked at him and I said, yes. So he opened the gate and we drove into Masada, even though it's closed. So we got to the parking lot. There's no parking lot, you know, so we just parked somewhere. And I said, okay, so I'm going to take the cable cart. But I go there and it's closed. And I'm thinking fast and I'm saying, so how can I get there to the top with my father and right. his brother? They're older than I am, of course. And I say, it's not good to go on the snake path.
It's a tough
now,
hike.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'm looking, and like in the corner of my eye, I saw a group. And it was eye contact between me and the madricha, the counselor.
Leader of the group, right?
Right. And she looks at me and she says, are you on Chaim's group? I said, yes. She says, so why are you standing there? Come on. So we went on the cable car. We went all the way. And my dad asked me, so who's that guy? I said, no, I don't know. So we walked on Masada, you know, had a great time. And you can't imagine this thing in,
not
like
in
Alamo
America.
In Texas. You
yeah,
know?
Yeah. This would happen at the Grand Canyon.
Not going to happen. No. Close is closed.
Such an Israeli story. Yeah. Thanks, Amir. We'll talk
You're
next
welcome.
Week.
The central thematic song from the band's visit, the Tony-nominated Broadway musical our guest this morning, Itai Benson, stars in, is called Waiting. It's a great description not only of what the characters in this wonderful show do, but what so many of us spend a large part of our lives doing.
Waiting, what's new here? You're waiting, I'm waiting, 'cause that's what we do here, same as we do every day for something I don't know to happen, you know, just something different to happen, just waiting for something to change, just a change. Sometimes it feels like we're moving in a circle around and around with the same scenery going by, but no one's complaining. We're experts at waiting. Along. Time is like syrup, and I'm the bug stuck in the syrup, just kind of trying to find out what I'm doing wrong.
That was Waiting from the band's visit, Tony-nominated Broadway musical, a great show starring this morning's two Jewish guests, Itai Benson. Cast albums available now. Itai Benson will be back here in just a few moments.
We welcome our Shin Shinim, Chen Dinachi, and Tamir Shakuri. Boker Tov, representing the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov.
Boker Tov.
So it's just about summer. It's hot. Summer in Israel is also hot, but a little bit different than a summer experience here in America.
Yeah. So in Tucson, it's always summer, but summer is even more summery.
No, that's not true. We had like 2 days of winter this year. Come on.
Right, right. Well, yeah, it's arguable. But in Israel, I feel like summer is kind of different because a lot of people ask me here, so do you go to camp in Israel? How does that work? And in Israel, we don't really have overnight camps. And if we do, it's through the youth movements, and it's for a week tops. So it's a different experience.
So you don't get to get rid of your kids for a month like in America.
Exactly. Usually you dedicate your time to work or to just rest and travel. And so the past two summers, I worked for once for a camp in America and once for like a day camp in Israel. Those are more common.
Mm-hmm.
But usually overnight camps are not really common unless there's one from Kakal that I don't know about.
Explain what Kakal is.
No, but it's not Kakal. It's the like Chevra Le'Hagenat HaTeva, which is like the
it's the nature society in Israel, but it's not like here. It's not like the Wildlife Association or something.
No, and sometimes they do camp, but also it's like for a week. It's no more than that, and so it's a really fun camp.
Kind of a nature camp, and you're out in it, and you might be doing some work. Preserve.
I did it in like sixth grade. And besides that, I feel like a lot of kids kind of use the time to like hang out with their friends. And if you would tell them like go for camp for a month or two, they'd be like, no, I want to have my summer. Like, you know, I want to spend time with my friends. So I think it's a little different here. Like you have your camp friends and it's a different experience. But also I feel like Israel has like more things to do in the summer than Tucson. I don't know if America in general, but like you can go to the beach like a lot and you can go to parks and like a lot more people hike. And I feel like it's just kind of like it makes more sense than in Tucson that people will stay in their houses for the summer.
Well, it's okay. People in Tucson spend their summers in San Diego and do exactly that. The stereotype used to be that Tel Avivis went to the beach every day in the summer.
I am the stereotype.
were there summer school or there summer programs that people do in Israel? Got very quiet here. So
a question. Not so much. I'm sure there are. I'm sure. But it's not half as common. Like, we don't really hear about it that much. I don't know anyone who did it, but I'm sure it exists.
Right.
The only thing I can think about is people taking the summer in order to study for the SAT version in Israel, the psychometric exam.
Right.
I had some friends that took half of their summer to just sit and learn for that. It's not ideal. Not most of the people do it.
Not what you want to do, but...
Nope. But
probably
school,
time well spent.
So actually, it's kind of a new reform in Israel now that the elementary schools keep going during the summer because a lot of kids want to go to a certain day camp and their parents can't really afford it because they need to work. So the schools, like my mom works in a school where they offer the teachers to extend their work till... in the middle of the summer,
almost
or something.
Like year-round schooling,
almost year-round
to provide and care for kids, basically.
Exactly, right. And the parents pay much less, and the kids have fun with their friends from school.
Well, that's great. It seems like a lot of fun with friends in the summer in Israel. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
We started talking last week about Poland and the rise in anti-Semitism there, a little bit about the incredible history of the Jewish community there, but also the new law that criminalizes talking about the Poles' role in the Shoah and the Holocaust. Let's dig into that. As you noted last week, certainly not all Poles were in support of this, but it did pass.
Right. That's a law that has very limited support. And what passes through the Polish parliament doesn't necessarily reflect the will of the entire Polish people any more than what passes through the U.S. Congress reflects the will of the entire American people. I mean, democracy is an imperfect system. It's better than any other one. What I wanted to talk about was an experience that happened to me once in Poland that really challenged me to rethink all the stereotypical assumptions about the role that Poles played in the Holocaust and that they were supportive or at best that they averted their eyes and looked the other way. And the story goes back to 1973 when I and a friend were leading a group of American Jewish teenagers through Eastern Europe on their way to Israel. And back in those days, before the fall of communism, everything about the travel industry anywhere in Eastern Europe, the Soviet Union, Poland, what was then Czechoslovakia, et cetera, everything was controlled by a state-run entity that had a different name in each country. In the Soviet Union, it was Inturist. In Poland, it was Orbis. In what was then Czechoslovakia, it was Cedoc, et cetera, et cetera. But they did everything, airline tickets, hotel reservations, train tickets, restaurant reservations, guides, the works. You had to go through them, and you also got your visa from them. So they knew where you were going to be every second. They programmed that, and they observed you very carefully. So the Polish tourist agency, Orbis, gave us train tickets from Krakow to Budapest that involved taking a train that crossed the border into what was then Czechoslovakia at a border crossing that was only open to the citizens of those two countries, Poland and Czechoslovakia. So at like midnight, 30 kids, American teenagers, and a couple of staff members, including myself, were thrown off the train by the border guards. And there we are in this train station in a little town in the middle of nowhere. And what do we do? So I sent two guys, two adults, to look for the nearest big hotel. They found a big hotel, a high-rise, that was run by a very stern, large Polish lady who was very strong-willed. And she got angry. She said, "This happens once a week. Don't worry, I'll take care of you. Go back and bring all the kids here, and I'll make the idiots who run Orbis in Warsaw pay for all this."
Huh.
So, to be continued next week.
It's a great story. Can't wait to hear the rest of it. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk then.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. A shadchan, a matchmaker, goes to a yeshiva bocher and says, "Do I have a girl for you?" "Not interested," replies the young man. "She's very beautiful," says the matchmaker. "Really?" says the young man. "Yes, and she's rich, too." "Really?" "And she has great yichus, great ancestry. She's from a very fine family," says the matchmaker. "Sounds great," says the young man. "But why would a girl like that want to marry me? She'd have to be crazy." "Well," replies the matchmaker, "you can't have everything." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. The Torah portion of Korach in the book of Numbers describes the greatest, most unprincipled and arrogant rebellion in all Jewish history. Its ending is dramatic and illustrative. There are reasons for this revolt, as there always are. After a failure of faith in the previous Torah portion of Shlach Lecha, the people of Israel have just learned they are not going to get into the Promised Land. Stung by this sentence of death in the desert, at the start of this week's portion, a group of rebels under the leadership of a priest, a Levite named Korach, challenged the control of Moses and Aaron. Born into the same tribe as Moses, Korach is an insider, rebelling against his own kind. "Who are these guys, Moses and Aaron, to take on the authority of ruling over us?" he asks. He claims that these religious leaders, who have God's certification, have arrogated to themselves powers that should truly belong to the people. In their place, he proposes placing a much more democratically appointed dictator, himself, to lead the people. Korach's faux populist rebellion threatens the very foundations of the Israelites' leadership. By claiming that Moses and Aaron have appointed themselves, he undermines the religious authority of the whole Israelite experience. If the God of liberation is not at the heart of this enterprise, if it's all a matter of personal ego and self-aggrandizement, of human-created delegations, committees, bylaws, and rules of order, we might as well go back to Egypt and live in slavery, as some Israelites now propose to do. Although Korach makes some effective points, at the center of this rebellion is a central lie. God appointed Moses, and this reluctant leader was never motivated by personal gain or ego. Moses wishes only to bring the people of Israel closer to God's ideal of a sacred community. Throughout the Torah, it's clear that Moshe Rabbeinu had no great desire for this high office, but instead he has held it reluctantly as a sacred trust given to him, well, actually forced upon him by God. In rebellion, Korach threatens not Moses' authority, but God's. Our Torah portion tells us that in order to determine the ongoing leadership of Israel, a great public trial is conducted. The net result is that Korach and his followers are completely destroyed by God, while Moses and Aaron are fully vindicated. It's always nice when God steps in and backs you up. The drama of this scene is powerful and lasting. The religious vision of Judaism is reaffirmed, an ethical foundation based on Torah and God, not a community like all others, based on human calculation and grasping for control. The abiding lesson is that a Judaism that doesn't base itself in humility and reverence for God, which is focused on personal gain and power politics, will fail. Only through faith, dedication to ideals, loyalty and devotion to the higher purpose of Jewish ethics and meaning can we reach our own promised land. The truth is that only a Jewish congregation and community that work together with an understanding that God is the true arbiter, that seek comity and community rather than control and domination, will attract the favor of God. And of all those, we wish to join and become part of a Kehillah Kedusha, our own sacred congregation. May this be our will. For if it is our will, it will also prove to be God's. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, Itai Benson, will explain how his own Israeli-American Jewish background influenced him in seeking to appear in the marvelous Broadway show, Tony nominated, when we come back in a moment here on To Jewish.
We continue with our To Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Well, that truce didn't last long. The day after a ceasefire was established on Israel's border with Gaza, at least 28 mortar shells were fired from Gaza into southern Israel, including one that exploded in the yard of a kindergarten shortly before students arrived. The Iron Dome missile defense system intercepted most of the shells, which were fired in three barrages last Tuesday morning. It was the largest number of projectiles fired on Israel from the coastal Gaza Strip since the 2014 war. Code red warning sirens went off throughout southern Israel. The same afternoon, the warning system was activated again in several communities. This brutal Palestinian indiscriminate firing of mortars and missiles into civilian areas is a war crime, according to all established international standards. In response, the IDF struck more than 35 targets belonging to Hamas and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad terror organization in Gaza. Among the targets was a terror tunnel that stretched under the Kerem Shalom border crossing for humanitarian goods. Weapons storage sites, naval targets, and a terrorist headquarters were also hit, all military targets. Israel views with utmost gravity the attacks against it and its communities by Hamas and Islamic Jihad from the Gaza Strip, said Israeli Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu in the hours following the attacks. Last Monday night, Palestinians used a machine gun to open fire from the Gaza Strip on the southern Israeli town of Sderot, often hit. The gunfire damaged several buildings and a car. This was the second attack on Sderot in 2 weeks. When you hear Israel's response to the Gaza riots and terror attacks described as unprovoked acts of violence, please beg to differ. This is not some sort of Zionist plot to torment noble Palestinians. It is war, by another name perhaps, provoked military response to terrorist acts and Palestinian war crimes.
Hine ma tovu umanaimu, sheveti achim gam yahadu.
In a particularly tone-deaf move, the Jewish identity of the Ugandan Jewish community, the Abu Yudaya, has been rejected by an Israeli government decision. The Israeli Interior Ministry denied the request of Ugandan Jew Kibbutz Yosef to immigrate to Israel last week. The ministry said Yosef, who is staying at a kibbutz in southern Israel, has to leave the country by June 14th. A representative of the Misrad HaPnim, the Interior Ministry, charged with establishing immigration status to Israel under the law of return, said the decision represents Israel's stance on the entire Ugandan Jewish community, not just this particular applicant. The ministry said Yosef could challenge its decision in Israel
Israel's high court. The Ugandan Jewish community, called the Abu Yudaya, numbers approximately 2,000, tracing its roots to the early 20th century when a former leader read the Bible and embraced Judaism. Most members of the Abu Yudaya have been formally converted to Judaism under the auspices of the American Conservative Rabbinate. They are thus not recognized as Jewish by Israel's mostly ultra-Orthodox Haredi chief rabbinate. In 2016, the Jewish Agency for Israel recognized the Abu Yudaya, seemingly opening a path for its community members to immigrate to Israel, but they have struggled to obtain recognition to do so coming from Uganda. In December, Israel denied a visa application by a member of the Abu Yudaya community to study at a yeshiva in Israel, reported here on Too Jewish. That led to accusations of racism. This week, the chief rabbinate published a list of draft criteria for religious courts in the diaspora to have its conversions accepted in Israel. If enacted, Jewish converts in America will face additional hurdles being recognized as Jewish by the chief rabbinate, which controls personal status issues like Jewish marriage, divorce, conversion, and burial in Israel. The Rabbanut, however, does not have authority over who can immigrate to the country. That's apparently getting dicey now, too. And that's the news of Jews around the world. To welcome back our guest, Itai Benson, star of the Tony-nominated Broadway musical, The Band's Visit, here's his very funny song, Poppy, Here's the Ocean.
I don't know with the girls, I don't know what to do, I don't know where to start. I'm smarter up here than I am down here, and up here I'm not too smart. They might say one thing or another, they might have smiled at me once or twice. If they have breasts and they're not my mother, then all I hear is
We welcome back to Too Jewish. Our guest this morning, Itai Benson, is one of the stars of the extraordinary Broadway hit, The Band's Visit, based originally on an Israeli independent film about an Egyptian band that goes to the wrong place, I guess is the best way to set it up. You can probably explain it better. Why don't you maybe share the plot for those of our audience who haven't had the opportunity either to see the movie or haven't yet gone to New York to watch the play?
Sure. Well, on a very basic level, the plot is about an Egyptian police orchestra from Alexandria, and they're set to play a concert at the opening of an Arab cultural center in the city of Petah Tikva. But for those who don't know, the P sound in Arabic is non-existent, so they accidentally end up in the tiny little desert settlement of Petah Tikva. Because of a mistake in their language.
It's a really funny play, and it's also could have sort of in Tikva, like this is a hopeless little town in the middle of the desert.
Exactly. So, yeah, Beta Tikva obviously means the house of hope in the middle of this vast emptiness, this desert. And they end up in this town. There's no bus to get them where they're supposed to go, and suddenly this group of Egyptian musicians dressed in police uniforms has to mingle with the local Israelis of this little nothing town where nothing ever happens, and they have to stay the night. And that's really what the plot is. It takes place over this one evening, and you watch how these two disparate groups of people find their shared humanity, really, over those things that unite us, like music and love and food and loneliness.
Loneliness, for sure. There's a wonderful song early in the show called Waiting, which I think kind of sets the whole thing up. And by the way, if you can't get to New York to see The Band's Visit, you should pick up the album because the MP3 is available, CD is available, and the music is really exceptional. But tell us a little bit about that particular song, Waiting.
Well, yeah, so the Waiting is really a theme of the entire show. In fact, there's a character called the Telephone Man, who's an Israeli guy in this town who literally stands almost the entire play staring at a telephone waiting for his girlfriend to call. all of the characters are in some state of waiting.
It's kind of a pre-cell phone remembrance of Israel to me.
Yes. I should have mentioned the show takes place in 1996, so there are no cell phones. There's just this one lonely payphone. But it's the characters are in a state of waiting, and what the director talked to us about is that this waiting, there has to be some sort of hope behind it,
mm-hmm.
that these people never just, I mean, when we wait, no matter what, when we as humans are waiting for something, we're anticipating that something will happen, even if we are bored. That's what keeps us going. I mean, even if you're waiting for the doctor's office, at the doctor's office, you are anticipating that they're going to come out and they're going to say your name. That's a running theme throughout our show, that these people are bored, they are dissatisfied, many of them are broken, but they are waiting for something to happen. And you can look at that on a level, on a very small level, like the doctor's office, or on a very large level, like faith and waiting for some higher power to answer you. And so this theme of waiting is crucial to the play.
There's also a lot of humor in the that there's a song you do, Pappy, Here's the Ocean. I mean, it's very funny. Tell us about that a little bit.
So my character is called Pappy. He's a young Israeli guy. He's a little awkward. He's a little disheveled. His main problem is that he can't talk to girls, because every time a girl looks at him or he tries to talk to a girl, he hears the sound of the sea, which is this. It's, which is a sound that might sound terrible over this microphone, but it's what he hears. And so I have this whole song.
Well, you know, people just put a shell up to your ear. You'll get the same effect. It's okay.
That's the same thing, yeah. I have this song that, if you see the show, it takes place in a roller rink. I'm on roller skates. I'm on this date. A double date, and one of the Egyptian musicians kind of invites himself on this date and gives me advice on how to actually talk and flirt with a girl. And it's a really sweet, really, I think it's funny because of how relatable it is. I think everybody goes through sort of a Pappy phase where they have trouble speaking to someone they like. And, I mean, I always tell people that I'm basically just playing myself in middle school. So it wasn't really hard to tap into it. But it's a great comic piece, and it's sort of one of these tongue-twisting patter songs. And, you know, he just talks about hearing the sea, and he talks about how he can't move, and how he starts to smell like falafel, and how, you know, he's just ridiculous things. It's a whole lot of fun to do.
And the show's a lot of fun too. Itai, tell us a little bit about your family, about your background.
Sure. Well, my father is Israeli, from Haifa.
The most civilized city in Israel, I have to say.
Yes, thank you, thank you. I'll tell him. I'm sure yes, when he hears this, he'll be really happy to hear that. My father's Israeli, my mother's American. My father is both of his mother, my grandmother, is from Czechoslovakia, and his father was from Turkey. So he's sort of a mixed background there.
Sure, Turkish Sephardic or Turkish Ashkenazic? I assume Turkish Sephardic.
Yes, Turkish Sephardic. Okay. So I was born in Boston, and then we moved when I was barely alive. We moved back to Haifa. And then a few years later, we moved to Florida. So, like, it's very much the sort of Jewish trifecta. Boston, Israel.
Boston, Israel, and Florida, South Florida.
Fort Lauderdale.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Yeah. And so I grew up mostly in the Fort Lauderdale area, but we used to go to Israel every summer. It feels very much like another home to me, and so much of my family is there. My whole father's side of the family is there, or we have extended family in Turkey, to which I've been a few times. And I went to college at the University of Michigan, and then moved right to New York City after college.
A Wolverine, and Very, very impressive. So how does your family feel about, I mean, they must have seen the film, The Band's Visit. They must be excited also, I would think, about your being in it.
They're thrilled. I mean, if they, you know, they've been very supportive of my career, and they've come to see almost every single thing I've done. But this, I think, for obvious reasons, carries the most weight, is the most personal. It's certainly the most personal project I've ever been a part of. And to, I think for my father, especially, for both my parents, really. My mother spent many years in Israel. She speaks fluent Hebrew. She may as well be Israeli. They've seeing me on that, on a Broadway stage, speaking the language that I grew up speaking, is, it's just, it's almost otherworldly. It's just something we never expected, and it's emotional. And my uncle, my dad's brother, came from Haifa. He came all the way from Haifa to come see the show, and he was really, he was crying. I'd never seen that from him before. And I think it's just very meaningful to be able to portray my true heritage, my true culture on stage. And everybody says that I sound just like my dad in this show when I speak.
I don't know
if that's a compliment. Or
yeah, I know. I was wondering, how does that feel?
He says it's a compliment.
I think it's a compliment. I think it's a compliment. Yeah, you know, if it's not too Ashkenazic, you know, really everybody must fell over that experience, because just not something you ever expected to see. Where can people go to find out more about the show? Where can people go to pick up the album?
Well, the album is available on iTunes, on Spotify, on all your, you know, major, I believe, Apple Music, all the major
streaming. Ooh, Apple Music. Streaming. That means I can put it on my phone and listen to it when I bike ride. Excellent.
That's exactly right. Yeah, I know you want to hear Poppy Here's the Ocean while you're riding your bike.
Yeah.
And obviously you can find, I believe it's thebandvisitmusical.com. You can find out a lot about the show there and get tickets there. And, there's plenty of information about it all over the internet.
Absolutely. By the way, my sister's going to see the show when she's in New York next week. So,
fantastic.
Yeah, that was my highest recommendation, because she had a couple of Broadway shows to go to. So, I'm sure it's going to be wonderful. Thank you. I want to thank Itai Benson for a great visit here on Too Jewish. If people want to find out more about you, do they just go to the show, or do they find you on Facebook? What's the best way to follow
you? I'm on Instagram at Itai Benson. I also have a website, itaibenson.com, and that's E-T-A-I.
Yes, of course, it had to be spelled differently.
I know.
Talking to someone whose last name is spelled C-O-H-O-N, just to, you know, make it hard.
There you go.
Itai, thank you so much. Continued success, and it's a wonderful show. I hope everyone goes to see it when they're in New York and picks up the album.
Thank you. Such a pleasure to talk to you.
My pleasure. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out from The Band's Visit.
There's magic in the air at this special place for fun. A place where fortune smiles and Tucson comes alive. This is Casino del Sol. The best games in town. Amazing dining and top-flight entertainment. This is a heart that beats with excitement, with passion and beauty. It's all waiting for you at Casino del Sol. This is the soul of Tucson. Presenting sponsor of University of Arizona Basketball. Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaki Tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday on Too Jewish. Our guest will be Jewish musician Mark Bloom, whose new project includes gospel music, jazz, and traditional Jewish themes. And, of course, listen to all of our podcasts on iTunes or at our TooJewishRadio.com website. Top 10 podcast in America yet again. Our playout this morning comes from The Band's Visit. It's the lovely song, Answer Me. My friends, may you have a good week, a Shavuot Tov, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Here I am, here I am, and the light is dying. Where are you?
sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.